It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Okay, a little bit better there. Thank you for joining me. This is the Carol Cox Show, and we're right here at KWAI 1080 AM. And always, as I've shared with you, you can pick us up at carolcox.com on the internet or live stream or podcast. And you can also go to Olelo and or go to YouTube. Cox 7826627 is the ID. Cox, COX 7826627. We've posted a lot of stories there, and we'll be posting many, many more. So feel free to go there and drop us an email and Facebook at Carol Cox or The Carol Cox Show. So this morning I have Mike Goodman. He's the director of the Puuhonua Villages. Okay, we have a mic problem here. You there? All righty, we're doing fine.
Okay.
Go ahead. Mike Goodman.
Yes, I'm director of the Hawaii Kai Homeless Task Force. Mm-hmm. And we are in support of an act that has come before the legislature called the Puuhonua Homeless Villages Act, because it will end homelessness in the state of Hawaii, or I should say, end the homeless crisis, mm-hmm. and could do it in less than 2 years.
Now, I was reading this, and we need everything that we can do to help homeless, but that's a gigantic claim.
Right.
To end people from Hawaii Kai going to end homelessness for the whole state, and just what others will ask, where did this idea come from, this bill? It seemed, how did you guys get related to this, or how are you related to the actual bill?
Well, we formulated it in Gene Ward's office, mm-hmm. and it's based on a lot of research. But the bottom line is this, it's very simple. Mm-hmm. The big problem has always been a lack of housing inventory. And all we did was connect the dots. We did research. We found out that there are 21st century materials incorporated into modular dwellings that can make it far cheaper to create housing than wood, brick, and mortar. And these movements are sweeping around the country and around the world. Sometimes they're called tiny homes. Sometimes they're called domes. Sometimes they take many different forms. But the point is that by getting off of traditional wood, brick, and mortar, we can create 8,000 dwellings for about 1% of what it would cost to create traditional dwellings. Mm-hmm. So for less than $200 million, we can afford to house every homeless person in the state. Now, is it the most ideal situation? Is a wood, brick, and mortar apartment or house better than, let's say, for example, an inter-shelter dome? Sure. Mm-hmm. But that's not the point. The point is that everyone will have a place to go. When everyone has a place to go, a decent place to live, you have no more homeless crisis. You still have a housing challenged population that needs services, yes, but no more crisis.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed the brochure here, and again, from where I stand and how I view this homeless matter, this the quote crises,
right,
that we invented, we government, mm-hmm. citizens and all, because mm-hmm. as your document stated, and some write-ups you guys made, you identified many of the problems, and they're just not drug related, they're
right.
just not mental illness, they're just not. So recognizing that, how long have you been at this, so that how can we put stock in this? Has it worked in other places, and specifically where has this been implemented?
Well, there was Justice Village in Los Angeles that mm-hmm. was for 14 years. There's the Puuhonua Owaianae Homeless Village, mm-hmm. which was spontaneously created by Twinkle Borge, and they're living in the Waianae Boat Harbor. And the interesting thing about Pu'u'onoa, Waianae, these were a group of homeless individuals that created this village on their own. And it's a working village, and they've done it without any help whatsoever. They don't have running water. They don't have electricity. If you can imagine taking what they did at Pu'u'onoa, Waianae, and just giving them homes, giving them electricity, giving them running water, giving them bathrooms, a place to lock valuables, access to public transportation and supportive services, you can imagine how well it would work. And the residents of Pu'u'onoa, Waianae, if you talk to them, they will actually tell you they're not homeless anymore because they've created an uplifting community. Now, is it ideal? Of course not. But they're living in shacks. They're living in dwellings built out of the refuse of others right now. And so the idea is to take what people have done around the country on a much smaller scale and combine it with what they did at Pu'u'onoa, Waianae, and step back and say, how many homes would we need to house every homeless person in the state? And the critical mass is 8,000. Why? Because the point in time count, the last point in time count, puts the homeless population at 7,200. 8,000 is a comfortable margin. It accounts for the fact that the point in time count is probably a little under what it should be. Mm-hmm. And it also accounts for the fact that many homeless people comprise families, and a family would be in one dwelling. So you're not going to have every individual homeless person would not have a dwelling. A family would share a dwelling. Mm-hmm. So 8,000 would be a critical mass. And then all we did was figure out what it could be constructed for. Mm-hmm. And it comes to less than $200 million by using alternative dwellings. And there are many different dwellings on the market that could fit this bill. The best we found so far was InterShelter Domes. They're the same type of dwelling that's being used by the First Assembly of God Church to create 12 units of transitional housing on the North Shore, which they haven't yet completed because they're stuck in permitting hell, but that's another issue. And we figured out what it could be done for. And that's really all it is. So at its heart, the bill is very simple. It's just simply creating enough housing, and it's doing it in a way that costs much less to make it possible to do it, not only for the money that we're spending now, but also in much less time than it would take to construct wood, brick, and mortar traditional housing.
Okay. Now, this is House Bill 2014. Now, one of the interesting things that that caught my eye on this is that you've already designated or identified specific land parcels, not just in general, but specific. How did you come up with that or arrive at that group of those parcels of land?
Okay, let me. I'll explain two things. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's also a Senate version of the bill,
which is
SB 2628, and that does not specify specific parcels.
Thank you. Last night I was sitting there trying to read it, and Brother I sat there. Okay, where's this bill in the Senate? The SB, and I couldn't.
Right. Okay. Right. It does not. Okay. So one does and one doesn't.
Okay.
And there's a two-edged sword in designating specific parcels. The specific parcels that were designated in the House bill are located in industrial zones. And there's a reason for that, because they didn't want NIMBY pushback, neighborhood NIMBY pushback. NIMBY meaning not in my backyard.
Like where I live, Mililani and Hawaii.
Right. To slow it down. To get it stuck.
Right.
So they designated specific parcels of land in the House bill. The downside to that is that specific parcels of land can become a sticking point that can generate objections to the bill. So there are some who will object to the bill because it's in industrial zones. Mm-hmm. Will say that, well, you're trying to sweep the homeless problem under the rug. The other problem is, with designating specific parcels on Oahu, is that I know I've spoken with Lance Niemi, who's Mayor Kim on the Big Island, his executive assistant, and I know that they would want a couple of villages on the Big Island. So the other counties are also going to want homeless villages to have a place for their homeless to live as well. So there's a two-edged sword. The positive side of designating specific plots of land is that you will get people to support the bill who are worried about it being in their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the idea is this is a crisis. We need to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a place for everyone to go. This doesn't stop wood, brick, and mortar. This doesn't stop anyone from moving anyone to an apartment, because it would only divert at most about 1% of what it would cost to create 8,000 wood, brick, and mortar dwellings.
Mike, one of the things from a humanitarian standpoint,
right?
Hawaii has treated homelessness as if it's of no importance, and treated the people they're insignificant.
Right.
I mean, we know that now. They herd them like sheep. They beat them any given time. You'll find them on the evening news and move them here and move them there, and that's costing money.
Right.
But it employs quite a few of the fat cats, uncles and nephews and cousins of the people in government or that favors the governors or the mayor's campaign, hold signs, all of that. Nothing to do with this. But one of the things that in reading the bill of 2014, it specifically identifies Sand Island, for example,
the
state recreational park, and with some clarity, is that the entire park, or what's
half
of the park? So
you
would take, and from where to where? You have any specific?
No, there's been no specific part of the park designated, but the park is about 141 or 142 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So they would take half of that park. The advantage to it is it's an underutilized facility, and it already has sewage and electrical lines into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes construction a lot cheaper. So that's the advantage to that piece of land, to that parcel. The entire, the idea is, just explain this to the audience, the idea is that we don't want to create ghettos. And we don't want to create, which can happen with public housing, as you know. I mean, that's happened in many parts of the country. And so the idea was to create 80 villages. And these villages would consist of no more than 100 units each.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be self-governing to whatever extent possible, just like Pu'anoa and Waianae. And this also takes advantage of existing networks amongst the homeless, because the homeless have existing social networks wherever they are. They do engage in self-government, even when they're in illegal homeless camps.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea would be, and just to really focus in a little more on your question, which is the homeless being swept from one place to another, I look at it as, yes, there can be, out of anything, there could be a homeless industrial complex, per se, where people are making money off of it. I think that I try not to be cynical, and I try and assume that everybody's acting with the best intentions, unless I know otherwise. And I honestly think that a lot of our leadership, and even a lot of people in the homeless services industry, are just caught up in the day-to-day minutia of what they're doing and just don't know what to do, and really haven't spent enough time thinking about it, about the problem, and try and do things. But what they're doing are piecemeal measures. They house a few people here, a few people there, so a small percentage of the homeless get into permanent housing, but the vast majority of them are doing what's called sleeping rough. There's a huge gap between shelters and permanent housing, and there's nothing in between, and that's a huge problem, because shelters are not a place to live. They're a dormitory for sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Well, in continuation of my comments and observations, we say industrial sites. Camel Industrial Park is one site. Here's what caught my attention immediately, and it reminded me of concerns we've always had. We're fixing the problem by creating these communities, these small communities in Madison.
Right.
And but these areas that they were submitting them, let's just go back to Sand Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that this is a success, what you're doing. I hope it's better than a stick in the eye.
Right.
And better than what we've seen the this Democratic government has put in place, and I notice you got a lot of Democrats that sign on to this.
Yeah, in fact, Democrats introduced both bills.
Yeah, that's just for gravy for them, but let's see how it falls out later on. You know, they fall asleep at the finish line or before the finish line.
Right.
You know, because it's on them. They need it, and you're not here to talk politics, but I can say these things because
sure.
I've watched the homeless issue. But Sand Island, for example, mm-hmm. and they all have a common theme or denominator or some common element that concerns me. If you go to Sand Island, you have a sewage treatment plant there, and it smells like the big S all day, every day, hydrogen sulfide.
Mm-hmm.
So would we cite those houses in that area, and what do we do to mitigate that? Now, these are human beings, and then along with that, in this area that is going to be cited, I'm not making an excuse, but to say that just because you're homeless, do we further exacerbate or assign you to a role of being less than human and having to live in that environment? Yes, you have a roof over your head, and you're living in, you know, in a community, but are you dying from other things that that community presents? So then you have a processing plant for medical waste and waste itself, autoclaving and whatever. And the air is filled with those fumes and gases. And then you have all the industrial recycling of oil and the smell of that. So if you're putting these people in there, are we really putting a roof over their head, so to speak, and giving them some community? But are we impacting them in that area? So in the process of to be successful, why don't we find land that is open and away from that, estate land, lots of land.
Right.
And why don't we, that bill I was thinking, that bill should have said, let's take back some of those $1 for 99-year leases to some of the old local boys here that have had favors and identify some of that land, the clean land that will be managed, you know.
Well, that's a legitimate concern and a good idea, and that's why I think the Senate bill is probably the better choice in that it doesn't specify particular parcels. Just in terms of the safety of Sand Island, the area in Sand Island you're talking about is the Sand Island Recreation Area where there are already campgrounds there. So,
they already shouldn't be there because every garbage company in the planet that's on the island, and all the car towing companies, and all the, you know, all the fumes, and you name it. So,
but you're absolutely right. And you know, any place that homeless villages are constructed have to comply with health and safety concerns. And there is in fact a homeless transitional shelter. I think it's called Haole. It's Haole Ma'oli, on Sand Island, and that had to comply with all the environmental, you know, before it was constructed. So, but again, your concerns are legitimate, and maybe a reason why the Senate bill is a better choice because it doesn't specify parcels; it leaves it up to the governor. But in any case, it's not really so much about the parcel, the particular parcels of land. Obviously, we want to find the best parcels of land possible.
But this bill, you see, we can't get it out of my backyard in Mililani. I won't be part of a effort or campaign to just sit at any damn where that just because we want it out, even though we declare it's not in our backyard motivated.
Right.
But it is. Get it out of our backyard and put them where, you know. And,
exactly.
And so this is Gene stands to be commended for putting something together because they've had years, they being the existing party, the controlling party, have had years to look at these things. And it's common sense. It was yurts at one time. Remember that? They were proposing to use yurts. It was out at North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how great, but who's willing to give up the land, right?
Right.
Campbell Industrial Park. Once again, an industrial facility emitting fumes from AES coal burning, H power burning everything, and so we would destine those people or assign them to that area because they're homeless and we're doing things. So then my question is, well, what then do we do for the health care? Because it's going to trigger got a lot of kids involved and asthmas and whatever. Just being devil's advocate, you know, that bill should identify and not be shy of asking for lands that are free of these things.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you're correct. Certainly, there would have to be, before anything is actually constructed, everything would have to comply with health and safety regulations. So your concerns are absolutely legitimate and couldn't be built on land that didn't comply with health and safety regulations.
Well, one of the problems is I'm nervous about it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speak ill of this because anything to put a roof over someone's head with sense is just the right humane thing to do. Screw the politics, the finances of it. It's gotten to be the problem. People not washing their hands, for example, on the mainland. Many states are struggling with hepatitis A now. And,
right.
You know, and when I see this, hey, good for Gene. Good for you. I mean, somebody need to light a fire up and bring the reality.
And good for Tom Brower and Willis Sparrow for introducing these.
Yeah, so all of that. Yeah. But again, just daring to utter the words, let's put them somewhere. But I'm just speaking out. I read the bill and thinking some of the pitfalls, and obviously it should be considered the environmental impacts, which will serve as a way to say no for people that want to impact it or object, you know. And the Pūho Nui that you spoke of up in Waianae.
Right.
Not Waianae. Waianae, it's not Pūho Nui.
It's actually called Pūho Nui o Waianae.
Yeah, so it grew on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in that, it was a reverse. It was humans' impacts on the environment, the Opai Ula, or the Opai Ula, right? Not the Opai Lolo, Opai Ula, the red shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And those estuarines, or that water, brackish water that's in there.
Right.
So, ankling ponds. So, in the, I'm hoping that every senator and every, in their right mind, support you in getting this, because something is better than nothing. But just because we see trouble coming, don't mean we throw our hands up and ignore the health concerns of humans, because you're motivated to do this because of human value.
Right, exactly.
So we don't want to abandon those just to put something over the head and say, well, we put your structures there, and so you don't need to be sleeping in the bushes in Mililani.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. Let's caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. You know, you have to move these people from point A, like Waianae, to Kaka'ako, to Sand Island. Does it really matter where you move them? So why not build these facilities on the vast areas of the Big Island and move them all over to the Big Island? Because if you're just going to build a cheap hut to put them a place to live, who's going to provide money for their food, clothing, and medical? Is the taxpayers going to do it? They're going to provide them the little shanty to live in, and that it's a disgrace to see that housing area just as they leave the airport on the right on before Sand Island Road. It's a ghetto. It's going to be a ghetto in a little while, and the tourists coming in from the mainland or elsewhere, first thing they see is this ghetto there. But I think it doesn't matter where these homeless live, because they're not going to go to work. Move them all to the Big Island, so as long as they have a place to live, keep them out of the rain, and you're going to have welfare to feed them. Somehow they're going to have to get free medical. So I don't think this problem can ever be solved. And try to take valuable land on this island to build ghettos. I'm against that. I think we've got vast areas on the Big Island to do this, and put them on a boat, move them over there. It doesn't matter if they're in a shanty on Sand Island or in Puna District.
So,
which is pretty nice.
Let me ask you a question. As a taxpayer, then, you would be willing to agree that it would be okay and accept that the government spend money on buying these units?
Well, as a taxpayer, you know, in my lifetime, I've paid over a million, over a few million dollars in taxes from a barefoot boy to getting a military career and a civilian career. I worked and got what I have today. But as far as, you know, we've got immigrants coming from Micronesia. They're not even local. And we have to take care of them. My taxes have to pay to take care of these people. And they fill out the housing, which would be for local people, the low-cost housing, KTP and other places. And now we've got people like Chin want to open up this place for 10,000 immigrants.
Ed?
You know, yep. This state can only handle so much, and the poor people who are working hard with husband and wife working over there to survive.
So you're getting away from my question. I just simply ask you, would you agree that these would be okay to build, and would you support the financing of them with government money? Now, don't give me the long speech. We've talked about the Micronesian, the Melanesian, the Polynesian, the Acronesian.
Stay away from that.
Yeah, but that wasn't my question. My question is, was speaking specifically about what these units, the Pu'u Bonua and the likes of it, this practice, would you support it? Do you find that acceptable? If they were to build it on the Big Island, would you accept that?
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Whether they build it here in Staten Island or Puna, what's the difference? The taxpayers are going to have to take care, and I'm one of the taxpayers, and
okay.
I paid taxes ever since I was
my question
12 years
was,
old.
Well, would you
I got my first Social Security card.
Would you be agreeable to that? I mean, would you, if they were to use your tax dollars to do that?
I'd do anything to get them off the island and off the street.
Okay.
Ed, let me just explain a couple of things to you, a couple of misconceptions about the homeless population. The homeless population that you see on the street generally, the street homeless, the chronic homeless, they comprise about roughly 20% of the homeless population, 20 to 15%. And of that, a very high percentage of those people are mentally ill, are substance addicted, and or you can collectively refer to them as impaired. There's also a large percentage of the homeless population that actually works and that can't afford housing because they've been priced out of the market. And there's a percentage of the homeless population that are homeless for other reasons. Some of the homeless are women with children that have fled abusive situations and ended up out on the street. So there are many different components to the homeless population. So it's not that they're all just not working or all impaired. The reality is you're already paying far more than homeless villages will cost. And as a taxpayer, I'm a taxpayer too, and I'm doing this as a volunteer. So I started getting into this because I'm just a frustrated citizen like you are. And what I found was in my research is we are paying far more just in dollars. So for instance, Queens Medical Center, just in their emergency room, spends $100 million a year taking care of unsheltered homeless people, where for lack of a shower, because they don't have proper hygiene, a little tiny cut turns into a MRSA infection. All right, $100 million a year. That's one place alone.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Ed, for your call. And we got another.
I'll just continue listening.
All right, we'll call back if you like to. Okay, thanks. There's another. Caller, go ahead. Thank you for calling. Go ahead. Hello? Carla, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments, questions.
Yeah, Carol, thank you for taking my call. You know, Carol, I deal with public transportation, bus and handy van. And I called Mark Alexander, the homeless person for the city department, and I told him about the evacuation situation at Sand Island for the homeless. I said, do you have any things in place for evacuating people for the tsunami or whatever in that Norline area, if there is evacuation, because there's one way in, one way out. And he's said, yes, we have it, but it's not written down. I said, why isn't it written down in black and white so they know what to do? He said, well, that's a good question. We have to work on that and implement that. But we do have protocols for bus and handyman individuals who have to be evacuated. This is a low-lying area. It's unsafe. You know, a big wave, like how it came in Japan, earthquake, massive wave, you only got maybe, what, 3 hours or less to get out of the area. It's dangerous. So I don't know why they put it so close to the water's edge. Not more inland. And then I called the Disability Communication Access Board. And they deal with ADA, and they told that person too, and she contacted the city civil defense or thing, and they're waiting for some kind of information how they're going to evacuate these people. So this is from last year. For the last year. And this is about 2018. They seem to move slow. They want to do things when it really happens and then learn from it. But that's not right. They need to do it ahead of time. And this is very important. So I don't know why they put them over there.
Like I said,
it's going to save the environment and everything else. So I appreciate your discussion on this, and to move them to another island, I don't think that's the solution. We've got to do it here.
It's not practical. The idea of moving everybody to the Big Island is not practical for 100 reasons. But the point with the previous caller is, the main point is that you have to, all of these problems that are generated by homelessness and all of these problems that cause homelessness have a very simple solution, and that is a place to live. It doesn't mean that it's not messy. It doesn't mean that all the problems go away, but you have a shot at solving them.
Right. And then for Mizuno to say that we're getting a lottery for the homeless.
Lotteries for them?
You must get a lottery for the homeless so they can use that money to help the homeless. You didn't hear about that one?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Well, that's the way the Democrats get the business done. They really want to build gambling casinos and what have you. So, you know, hey, bring a poor, hungry, starving child and see if we can fatten him up if we just were able to roll some dice on the table. You know, that's the insanity, but that's what this government presents us.
Probably going to cause more homeless by doing that. People just find their tickets. And if gambling is legal here, you know, it's
going to
be really bad.
And as they always say, if there's a place where you can go and get corrected and have your thoughts reinvented, and many of those people in the state house and in the state senate should go to that school, because they come up with some really interesting things, right? When in reality, the homeless issue is growing around us every day, intensifying, and they want to. Well, we could get our gambling. We can get gambling in here. Or we could do a lottery, something, you know, and so unfortunate. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Darrell.
All right. Bye. Caller, thank you. Go ahead for Mike.
Oh, hi, Carol. This is Dave. I find it incredible your caller that called about the push them all on the Big Island and put them in a, you know, get them out of the way, you know, because, you know, they're not really good for nothing. And all they want is welfare and to lay around. You know, the majority of homeless folks actually work, but they don't make enough money to live on, to buy, to have housing, to rent housing, to, you know. And so that's the big problem here is an income problem. The wages aren't enough to try even the $10 an hour. Try to, or even $15 or even $20 an hour. Try to rent a place for $1,600-$1,800 a one bedroom apartment here on this island. And so, I think your guest has a good intermediate answer. And the problem is that we know the developers are not going to, they have no interest in selling low income housing.
Right.
And so this has been an emergency for years.
Well, that was one of the reasons why I thought, well, I'd love to have him come on, because I would think there's going to be a lot of pressure put on to say, no, we don't want that, because they're going to claim it's going to take jobs within the mortar and the bricks type of facilities. And so by getting it out there, people like yourself who appreciate something like this, you know, the politics of it and where you place it comes later, but I would think there's going to be a really objection from the brick and mortar industry.
I can imagine.
The brick and mortar. Yeah, actually, if the brick and mortar industry does object to it, they really, well, they shouldn't, obviously, on moral grounds, but even on selfish grounds, they shouldn't, because even on selfish grounds, this wouldn't affect them at all. You're talking about stuff that wouldn't be. We're not building 8,000 units. It's not that we're making a choice between building 8,000 units of brick and mortar and alternative construction. It's the choice between alternative construction and nothing. Mm-hmm. So they're not losing anything. And we all of us, whether you are a wood brick and mortar builder or whether you own a hotel, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, the homeless crisis, and certainly if you're homeless, is bad for everybody, not just the homeless. We're all affected by it.
And this will not result in camps of refugee camps. Not, we talk about ghettoization.
Right.
I shake when I hear people promoting something and then they say, but it'll become a ghetto. It only becomes a ghetto because government has a tendency of throwing just enough meat to piss the dogs off rather than to nourish them and give them the adequate nutrients. So, that's...
We're paying an enormous price just to keep people homeless. The homeless person costs the state, I heard a figure about $40,000 a year. Yeah. Well, with that, you could pay for everything. You could pay for a nice apartment, and food, and everything.
I don't think I disagree. I don't believe it may cost that amount, but this is what I believe: the cost of the homelessness that they talk about comes from the use of the squads to go around and seize and collect and push people around. That doesn't make it justifiable, but they say this is the cost, because they have an army of people who they're giving temporary jobs or 90-day contracts or privatizing it and all. So we have to be careful when we throw these numbers out there, because listen who's telling you these things. They're not telling you that they're hiring their mamas, uncles, cousins, and brothers and sisters to be part of this team. You understand? So I beg to that the public understand that when they lay out these numbers, oh, it costs this amount per person. Yeah, but it's exacerbated by the fact that you're hiring your friends, and we don't need that. Maybe a different approach, you know.
Right.
Gene Ward is... go ahead.
The thing is, I mean, really, the real cost is the human cost. The human cost and the human resources cost. When people are just wasting away on the sidewalks, in the bushes, they are not doing much for themselves and for the society in general.
There are so many. First of all, there are so many costs. First of all, the homeless sweeps run about $500,000 every time they do a homeless sweep. So that could be put into housing. Second of all, there's the health cost. And I'm not just talking about, like, the numbers at Queens Medical Center. San Diego County back in September had a hepatitis outbreak that was generating the homeless community that started to infect the general population. All right? This goes back decades. New York City in the 1990s had an outbreak of drug-resistant... I forget what it was called, but anyway, it was a deadly disease that was drug-resistant. And that actually started to infect the general population. The flesh-eating bacteria was found in a homeless population in Toronto, Canada. So when you have a population living unsheltered, sleeping rough, it's a breeding ground for disease, crime. It affects all of us. There's so many costs. There's the cost of increased crime, there's the diminishment of the environment, and there's the human cost to the homeless itself. There's the moral cost. There's the cost that we that we pay for not taking care of our fellow human beings, and so it's very, very hard to quantify. But not taking a bold action is insane, and to allow the current situation to continue where the plans are really no plans at all. The plans, except for these bills that are in the House and Senate, the Puanoa Homeless Villages Bill or the P Homeless Villages Bill, there are no plans out there, and there are no plans to make plans. This is the only thing there is. It's the only game in town.
Sure.
Everything else is, let's build more affordable housing. Well, that's a meaningless statement unless you have the money to do it, and you know where you're going to do it, how many units, et cetera.
You know, there's another cost, too. It's a psychological cost. I mean, a lot of homeless folks, if they weren't already that way, that they will get that way. You can become psychotic just by the fact of being homeless and being because a lot of people just can't stand it. You know, I mean they. I can tell you personally, my wife and I and my son were homeless for about 10 years, and it took an unbelievable toll on our lives. I'm really surprised we survived. We're now 65, but we were. We pretty much almost lost our lives many times being on the dark street in one way or the other. And I had a lot of homeless folks, friends that lost their lives very prematurely because of the condition of being out there, and then the psychological the idea of always being the threat of the law too, that you're going to be. Picked up for sleeping on the sidewalk, and they're going to take your stuff, and you know the criminal element is out there too. And I mean, I had a knife put right up to my neck one night when I was sleeping. I mean, that's just an example of what happens,
right.
You know. And so, good for you. That's a good start. And I think politically, this year will have to be the year. Really get on the side of the homeless.
You know, that's the whole point. Everyone would have a place to go. I get that in a civil society, we don't want people living in parks. We don't want, 10 tons of trash being hauled out every week. And we don't want people sleeping on the side of the freeway. But if there's nowhere for them to go, and all you're doing is sweeping them from place to place, that's insanity. You know, it's fine. You want to tell somebody, okay, it's illegal, you can't camp in this park, but you have a place to go. The only place they have for them to go right now are shelters. And shelters are not a place to call
on
a home.
People don't seem to understand that one of the best things for your health is a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Without a good night's sleep, you need shelter for that, and you need a protection from that, from the environment and all that kind of just to get your sleep right.
You need a place to take a shower too. You need a place to go to the bathroom. I mean, these are very basic
things. Without sanitary facilities. I mean, these are basic.
Well, anyway, we're coming down to the last couple of minutes, but as I just gave Mike a note, we're going to carry over the next hour. I had scheduled for 1 hour, but there's quite a bit I'm sure he'd like to chat about, and I see a couple of the callers calling in. Are you there, Dave? I guess we lost you, Dave. But we'll be back. I'm talking with Mike Goodman. He is the director of
the Waiakai Homeless Task Force.
Okay, and he is talking about the bill 20, House Bill.
Yeah, there's House Bill
2014
and Senate Bill 2628. It's the Pu'unoa Homeless Villages Act, and they're bills that could potentially end the homeless crisis in Hawaii in less than 2 years and do it for less than we're spending.
And you know, I'm sure there's people out there going to say, well, that's just one more trick in the bag. Well, everything. We need to look at everything now because it's gotten to the point. And when we get to sorting human beings out amongst ourselves, you know, so you got a good job. So you were fortunate. But when you were born, you had nothing. You came in bare-ass naked, right? And so you were fortunate to have a family and conditions to contribute to you having a quality of life and got lucky. A friend of mine sent me a letter, a note Tina was on, said they found a body of a homeless person in North Carolina, I think. He was a USC grad, and he was a soldier, veteran, and he died homeless. So there's a misnomer that everybody out there is out there because of drugs and all, you know. And
right.
This Pu'uhonua, call it whatever you want. Where is this coming from, these units? Where would they be provided? Who is there a contract already identified?
No.
Or the source, a manufacturer?
No. There's a wide variety of companies that manufacture alternative dwellings that could be constructed for the amount of money that would be appropriated by this bill. The bill only mandates that alternative construction be used, that innovative alternative construction be used, and helps mandate it by the amount of money that would be spent on
that one unit over there at the airport that they found out it doesn't work and all that. It's a similar modern age shelter. They spent millions on it, and they're proclaiming it's not functional.
Not sure which
so
one.
So you could take that one, start with that one, and move it somewhere, and that would be a good start to house a number of people, right?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
But you know, at Sand Island, I was sitting there thinking, I wonder what struggle it would be because the private schools have baseball parks over at the Sand Island. You aware of that?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, so public land. So I just, other than the environmental concerns, and I don't believe that just because you're homeless is, well, we're going to give you a home, but you have to breathe crap all day long.
Right.
I don't, whoever subscribed to that and ascribed to that is just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're unfortunate that you don't have anything, but that does not mean people should say, well, we're going to build this and consign you to this area, and you just smell it and sniff it and bathe in it. No, that's not humanitarian effort either. But let's come back in the next hour, Mike.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Sure.
And then we'll talk about all the things that we haven't talked about that you want to, and if you want to get people to call in and support this bill and what have you, what do they call? We'll talk about that in the next hour,
okay.
All right?
Okay.
This is the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Mike Goodman. And we're talking about homeless and some solutions to it. And he has, there's Bill HB 2014 and Senate Bill
2628.
Okay. We'll be right.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
To learn, grow, and thrive. So while you might think of the Y as the place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. That's the why. We're so much more. The AM dial.
Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
My brother.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay. Good morning again, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. I have Mr. Mike Goodman. That's G-O-O-D-M-A-N. Some would say he's a good man.
Some might not.
He's with the Hawaii Kai...
Homeless Task Force.
Homeless Task Force. And we're talking about the... they're proposing... There's Bill 2014, not they. I mean, a number of House representatives, state House representatives, have actually signed on Bill House Bill 2014 to identify various locations and consider the use of non-brick-and-mortar units to house homeless at various places and utilizing state land and other lands that are available. So, anyway, not to talk and take up his time, but we had it in the early hour, and some of the things I think I would like him to give him an opportunity to share, because everybody has come by and talked about it, but, you know, so let's entertain everything that is something good will come of this or can be used or if it's adopted. So Mike has a number of issues here that he was concerned with, and he and I were talking. So one of the reasons given against the homeless P villages, and that's Pu'uhonua, and we call it the P villages, they call it. And Mike has, for example, it's a naive, simplistic to say that the, quote, P villages bill would end homeless crises in Hawaii. Homelessness is an incredibly complex issue and multiple intractable causes.
Okay. So, first, I just want to start by saying that this bill, the P homeless villages bill, and there's a Senate version, too, which is SB 2628. Is a sea change in terms of what's been done until now. What's been done until now are piecemeal measures where a small percentage of the homeless population get housed while the rest continue to sleep rough. And what's also been done, if you go on the governor's website or the mayor's website, you'll see what are really aspirational platitudes, like we need to build more affordable housing, that permanent housing is the solution. And those are aspirational platitudes. You couldn't remodel a bathroom with that. You got to have specific plans. What makes this bill so different, so radically different from anything else, is that it will build enough units to house every homeless person in the state. And the magic bullet that allows it to do that is just simply by using unconventionally constructed housing, modular housing, using 21st century materials that are far cheaper than wood, brick, and mortar. And so you would think that everybody would be jumping on board. I mean, this is a terrible crisis that's facing the state. We've been dealing with this for decades. And the needle has, despite massive amounts of effort, dozens of programs, there seems to be very little progress. I know there was a 9% reduction in the homeless count from the point in time count from 2016, from 2015, but look all around us, we still see a massive problem, particularly with the chronic homeless and the street homeless. So it's a disaster, and we've really got to do something about it. We've got to take bold, comprehensive action. So the question is, why isn't everyone jumping immediately on board with this? And one of the problems that we've had in terms of getting people to understand this is that people think that this is such a complex problem with so many different causes. There's mental illness, there's substance addiction, there's the cost of housing, there are abused women that have fled their abusive homes and ended up homeless. I mean, for as many homeless people as there are, that's how many causes there are of this problem. So it's naive and simplistic to say that this bill can end the homeless crisis in Hawaii. The answer to that is that although the causes of homelessness are complex, the solution is relatively simple. And this is decades of research, just mounds of research, done by Sam Tsambaris and many other people, by HUD, show that a stable place to live solves a myriad of problems. And the solution to homelessness, simplistically enough and simply enough, is a house. And when you have a house, what happens is that, first of all, now no longer that person is no longer on the street, which makes them better off and it makes us better off as a society. But it also means that all the other problems that they have, whether it be drug addiction, substance addiction, problems with employment, whatever it is, become easier to solve at that point once you have a home. I mean, if you can imagine, if you're mentally ill, it's hard enough or particularly if you're substance addicted or a combination of the two, it's hard enough to recover from that when you have a home. Can you imagine trying to do it when you're sleeping on the sidewalk? Another objection that we've had is actually from within some people in the homeless services industry that want to see the homeless in brick-and-mortar homes in what's called scatter-site housing throughout the community. And they're absolutely right. That is the gold standard. That is better than putting people in villages, even though these won't be, you know, large public housing projects. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about villages of 100 homes each with self-government to the extent that it's possible. So we're not talking about creating ghettos or cold-hearted public housing projects with rising crime rates. So the problem is that by holding out for the gold standard, we're essentially accepting the status quo, which is unacceptable, which is absolute madness. The status quo is that we have shelters on one end of the spectrum, we have permanent housing on the other end of the spectrum, and really not much in between. And shelters aren't viable for a lot of homeless people for a lot of reasons, particularly in a place like Hawaii, where you don't need shelter from the elements. For a lot of homeless, if you're mentally ill, for instance, if you can imagine how difficult it would be for any of us to go into a dormitory setting and sleep with 100 other people, can you imagine if you're schizophrenic trying to do that? Or you can imagine being one of the under 100 people and having to sleep on a cot next door to somebody who's a schizophrenic, trying to deal with that kind of situation. So if you're substance addicted, there are other problems. And there are also rational reasons why people don't want to go into shelters. If you're in a tent on a beach and the weather is warm, you're better off than you are in a shelter for many reasons, because what are you going to do? You have to leave a shelter during the day, or unless you're going to spend all day in your cot. You've got belongings that are in a shopping cart. You can only bring a certain amount of belongings into a shelter. What if you have pets? A lot of homeless people have pets. There are many, many reasons why shelters are a difficult problem. Why there's a need for shelters, because at least it affords people who need to get off the street or want to get off the street an opportunity to do so temporarily, but they're not a substitute for a home. A home is a place of sanctuary. A home is a place where you can exclude others. And that's what you need. That's the kind of stability that homeless people need. And those are the working mechanisms of Housing First, by the way. And Housing First is the accepted paradigm that has mountains of evidence to support it throughout the country. So I'd like to take some callers, and we can go through more of the objections if there are any callers, or we can just move on with some of the objections that people have had.
Well, one of the questions that I would have, or I have,
right,
is that how do you pick the communities? Now, I don't know what Mililani, but I know the Snooty Tootie out there. I live there. And,
right.
And I can imagine saying we're going to site one of those facilities or P houses or pool in that area.
Right.
Probably the blow their stat, because we are separate from the human race. Because we got money, or we got a house, and we have a
brother, right,
and we drive our Lexus, and our streets are paved again. I mean, our streets weren't really broken, but the goodness of the mayor repaved them.
Right.
Not to mention other places that didn't get paved. But I'd like to know, in Hawaii Kai, is there an area, there's state land out there? Would you be identifying an area out there? I noticed the bill didn't mention that. But
right,
it mentioned parks and whatever, and industrial sites.
owned by state. What would be the take on the people in Waikai, or have they spoken, you being on the homeless board?
In Hawaii Kai, one of the things that we've supported, and this is apart from the bill because it's on city land, was the old Jobs Corps Center in Cocoa Head Park, to use that as a village, and in particular, we were talking with U.S. Vets about maybe having them run it for homeless veterans. And that's a great site because it has infrastructure. It's the old Jobs Corps Center. It has sewage and electricity already there. But you're absolutely right. There is NIMBYism. NIMBYism is not in my backyard. And to be fair to communities, they have legitimate concerns. Illegal homeless encampments, like in Kakaako, do generate crime, trash. We're not talking about illegal homeless encampments, though. We're talking about villages that will be well-organized, self-governed to a certain extent, but only to the extent practical. And we found that self-government is a good thing, and it's been demonstrated as a good thing. But the point being is that what we've got now is homeless people sleeping rough in our neighborhoods.
Okay.
We're much better off having them in villages. Sleeping rough does lead to crime and does lead to our parks and streets being trashed. This won't. The other part of that is there is logic to using state land that's located in industrial areas just to get this done quickly, because you don't want these villages to be held up in the courts. We need them. We need this yesterday. We do have a real crisis, and it needs to be handled. So that's one reason why the House bill specifies land located in industrial areas. But as you pointed out, there can be problems with that. Lands located in industrial areas can have environmental problems, and so we need to be careful of that. And there are laws too that would ensure that that dwellings could not be built in places where there were.
See, here's the problem with that.
Yeah.
I cringe when I hear others say what you're saying about there's laws and whatever. Keeping in mind, this is the state of Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's self-assessing.
Yeah.
Self-enforcement.
Yeah.
You take off subject a little bit. The emergency alarm or alert.
Right.
You know, they screwed it up, and now they're going to investigate it up. You know, that's not, you would want someone to come external to do a thorough investigation, but they're
right.
doing their own investigation.
Right.
And then they'll tell you it's doing okay, they're self-assessing. So
right.
I just think that the good of it is that these units, this approach would complement and make things better. It's just getting in. Who would run these facilities, and how would they run? The mechanics of that and what have you. That would be a concern that I have.
Right.
There's a caller online. That's
sure.
Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hi, Carol. Again, I'd like to tell about a mind-boggling statistic. Do you know there's about 5 vacant homes in this country for every homeless person that is? And on this island, I'm still looking for the statistics on it, but I know there's literally many, many hundreds of vacant homes that have been vacant for years that just stay unoccupied. And I consider that an injustice. That it can be that way. I think there should be some kind of legislation that would, if somebody, an owner is going to leave a place vacant for more than, say, a year or so, that it needs to be turned over to house somebody.
That's some sticky ground there. That sounds like having a Gestapo or having some.
Yeah, you would actually, you'd run into the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. You couldn't do that.
I think you'd run into...
You can't seize people's property without just compensation.
No, I think you'd be run into a pit bull, or a couple pit bulls trying to just serve the paper.
Right, and if you want to eliminate all private property, that's never worked anywhere. So
No. But the problem is that's quite a huge problem. But that could go a long ways in solving the problem if these vacant lands were being used. They're making housing. These aren't lands. These are houses and apartments. They're just sit there for years, not being utilized, not being housing people. And there must be some way to say that.
Well, first of all, I'm not so sure. I mean, it's really a red herring, because I'm not so sure when you're talking about people that don't. Let's say you're talking about extremely wealthy people. You know, you hear about investors investing in Waikiki and buying up units just as a place to dump money. People from China, or even you hear about in New York, corrupt dictators dumping money in billionaires dumping. You know, just looking at place to park illegal cash and bidding up apartments to hundreds of millions of dollars. There's in fact an area in New York now called Billionaire's Row on 57th Street because of that. You're talking about a completely different market anyway. That wouldn't affect, you know, the so-called affordable housing market anyway. So from an economic point of view. But really, what we're talking about here is very simple. The point of these bills, and the reason why everybody should get behind these bills, is these bills will, for less than the government is spending, create 8,000 8,000 units that people can live in for free if they have no income. And everyone will have a roof over their head. That's the important thing. We'll stop the bleeding.
You know, and one thing I think maybe that might be something you all better emphasize with the legislators is that, you know, these units don't have to be free, or even, I mean, they have to be affordable for them. And, I mean, a lot of working people will be happy to pay $200 or $300 to, you know, help with the cost of these things, you know.
Well, the way it works in the bill is they're free. If you have income, it's 20% of your income. But if you have dependents, then for each dependent you have in your family, you subtract $100 a month. So it might take it down to zero again. So the idea is it's a come as you are. You don't have to qualify for it. Like for instance, we have the governor was just touting recently Kauahiki Village. That was built near the airport, near Kihei Lagoon. And I don't want to disparage Kauahiki Village. It's a wonderful place, wonderful project. Yeah. And it was for homeless families. But what people need to understand is that as wonderful as this is, it's still about $725 a month for a one-bedroom apartment, about $900 a month for a two-bedroom apartment. And the cost was roughly $250,000 per unit to build by the time you're finished. And actually, all the phases aren't finished. So if you were to extrapolate that out and try and create 8,000 Kauahiki-like units across the entire state, enough for every homeless person, it would cost $2 billion.
All right.
Now, you could say, well, we can afford that. Look, we're spending $10 billion on the rail by the time it's all said and done. Well, you might be right about that, but we have to live in the real world. In the real world right now, nobody's earmarking $2 billion to create enough Kauahiki villages. So what we're saying is $200 million is doable because that's less than we're already spending on this thing we call the homeless crisis. We can do this now. It could be done in as little as 2 years. Let's just do it. Get a roof over everyone's head. Then you want to move anyone into brick and mortar from there because they'd be better places to live. I acknowledge that. Great. But at least you'd stop the bleeding.
I don't understand. What is this, $250,000? Where these houses were donated, right? Or the prefab?
Well, the way it worked was it was $12.4 million for the first 30 units. That's phase one. There are five phases, okay? Now, the way it works out is, the way the math works out, that the city spent $4 million of that, all right? And the rest, I think, was private money. Maybe there was some federal money in there. I'm not sure, but that's not the point. The point is the city only spent about $4 million. Now, some of that included infrastructure that the other four phases will use. So we didn't get figures on whether we didn't assume that it would cost $12 million for each phase. We said, okay, so let's say it costs $6 million each, $6,200,000 for each of the next four phases. So when you calculate it that way, it comes out to roughly about $250,000 per unit.
And now, mind you, hold on, Dave.
Where's the land coming on this? Is this like a lease land?
Hold on, Dave. But all that is spoken is that we don't have the other side of that. I mean, these are numbers that you're tossing out there. The amount, $12 million.
$12 million is the actual figure. Phase one,
right.
$12.4 million.
I'm trying to figure out even the construction of the new ones you're proposing. How much would one of those cost?
To give you an idea, one of those would come to about $20,000. Well, if you're talking about the including the infrastructure,
no, I'm talking about a package.
It's $1.4 million for 100.
Okay.
For 100 homes.
Okay.
So that would create...
And the square footage is...
The square footage would be about 300 square feet each.
Per unit.
Right, per unit. And it has to be a minimum of 300 square feet by law.
Mm-hmm.
By this particular bill that's being promulgated in the House and Senate.
You know, we got another call. Dave, we have another call. I'm going to try to entertain him and give him a call. You all right with that?
Sure.
Okay, and then hold on. I'll try to call back. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment. Hello.
Hey. I was listening about, you know, building the shelters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, private shelters, and I wanted to say that, you know, even if it costs money, that food, water, and shelter is a human right, and you know, I mean, that should be something that we should even spend money and if it's, you know, been calculated, even that it's going to cost us money, I would be for, you know, really making it a viable place for these people where they can have a private, safe place to go, and it doesn't have to be brick and mortar as far as, you know, most of those folks are concerned anyway. And I was just thinking about what the other guy was saying about how to, you know, get this problem that society and the cost of land in the first place, and you know, about people having houses that, you know, that are empty. But what about legislation that discourages incentives for rich to exploit the land, like a cap on the amount of profit allowed when they buy and sell land? That, of course, would be, you know, everyone would scream and everything, but the land value would go down, and more folks could afford it. And, you know, that is that so impossible to put some sort of cap on the monstrous amounts of money? And like you were saying about the rich row, where they just dump all their billions of dollars to either make money or put it somewhere.
Well, you can tax.
Would that be something that could be done?
Well, you can tax.
At least
government
some sort of legislation to start some caps on the amounts of money that developers are making to exploit the land and try to bring the cost of the land, the value of the land.
You can tax. You can.
You know, seems to me would go down. I don't know.
Well, you can.
How I understand it.
You can. A government can tax profit, okay, or income.
No cap.
No. I understand what you said. A government can tax it, but you can't really cap it without confiscating property, and you can't. No, and you're getting into economic issues that are quite complex, and I don't know whether we have the breath or, and I certainly don't have the knowledge to really.
You say that you can't sell it for a mom and make that much money.
But to cap the amount of money that you can sell something for would be considered what's called a taking under the Fifth Amendment. You'd be taking someone's property. You'd be taking a certain percentage of someone's property. And the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution provides that property shall not be taken without just compensation. So that means the government can't go in and take your house, right, to put up the rail line or your business without going through a condemnation process and paying you money for it. So that's you know, that's what we have in this country to protect private property. And as I pointed out to one of the early callers, if you wanted to eliminate private property, that's something that's never worked anywhere in the world that's been tried. Even you know, the socialist countries of Western Europe that are called socialist are really capitalist countries with a strong social support network, but they still have private property. So, that's okay. So that's
Well, maybe just do it for corporations. They're not allowed to, you know, well, I guess corporations have the same rights as a human. But, well, anyway, okay, I can't understand why it can't be done, but it just seems like it's not.
Well, we can do it. I mean, we can house everybody. That's
right.
We can house everybody. That's
what dollars they can't make isn't there in the first place.
Well, the point is that we can house everybody, and that's what these bills are about. These bills will do it.
Yeah, great idea. But that was what I started up by.
Yeah.
I thought I would just digress for a second about the whole reason why they're out there.
Well, it's certainly.
I think that's a great idea, and that they should have a safe place, and if they can. You know, have their own, you know, amount of self-governing that might be something that benefits them, you know, psychologically.
Well, here's my concern with all what I'm hearing is that we want to provide the units so that people can live in and have cover and shelter, and we're getting into the politics of it, and that's not my interest because we can start the entire process will fail. If you were to just get a diamond studded roofing over these units, because it's going to be handed to the government, or the government's going to have a say in it, and the enrichment, you take the first step down there at we had Willa Sparrow, his son, end up running the facility, you know, these kinds of things. So there's a lot of, we blame a lot of the homelessness on the individual that is homeless. But the reality is that we need to put the onus on the people that is responsible. Like you're talking about the cost of taking someone's home and prohibiting it. And
right.
We would never stand for that. But all of these things do contribute. Every little piece, just like we say, there's, you don't know the tapestry of the number of people, the types of various backgrounds that are homeless. And so we don't know, and we won't consider all the reasons that maybe is driving and contributing to the homelessness from standpoint of failure to legislate properly when we talk about affordable homes. Now, that's a trick. The affordable homes, if you look at affordable homes in the Hawaiian term, the way they use it here, that means you can build a $90 billion facility, a housing or apartment building.
Right.
With the promise that you're going to do affordable housing.
Right.
The units are going to cost you, this is just an example now, $30 million. So what's affordable? So you sell them for $8 million. So you automatically, that practice, and then that individual decides, well, I tell you what, I want to buy back those homeless, that condition, and I'll pay for them. And we have that kind of behavior, too, that have gone on. So there are many developers have actually purchased and built with the promise that they would have affordable homes.
Right.
And then they buy back.
Mm-hmm.
And they give the city the money. And then what happens to the money?
Good question.
So we really need the things that the Pu'uhonua would probably offer some relief and to some degree, but it won't be it's going to be impossible to make the claim that it will solve all problems. That's a magical pill. But it may reduce the problems, but it's all based on the integrity of the system that is managing it. I don't want to sit here and pretend that, if we built them, it's perfect. It's going to end all.
No! It's never going to end all our problems, but it will end the homeless crisis.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
I say, but I don't believe. This self-governance.
Yeah.
Why are we? It appears that, and this is nothing to do with the units.
Mm-hmm.
This is the human conversation part of it. We introduced that, and self-governance, why would you relegate them or designate them self-governance? How do you arrive at that when, in fact, it would be state land and there should be rules and conditions because everything gets chaotic and everything gets corrupted like we see in the regular government with eyes and ears and rules? So you then would have to introduce new legislation to address the self-governance, right, like the AOAO, the condominium places.
Right.
So you'd have all kinds of... So I would say what we need to do is stick to the identified places to cite these, and the discussion of self-governance, I don't believe that should ever be considered. Now, if they want to have boards within there or membership where they, you know, within the house, but still yet be not exempt from all the rules or self-governance, the government rules and regulations that exist.
Well, what the bill specifies is self-governance to the extent practical. And you mentioned AOAOs, condo associations. All condo associations are self-governing. The reason why...
Many of them have nightmares.
They're always... Whenever people are involved, there are going to be problems.
But see, that's what we're trying to avoid, getting into more problems. That's my point. See, I'm not to shirk it off and say, this is something... If the package... Yeah. It's a package that you're selling.
Right.
You're not
right.
just selling tarps and poles to keep people dry and warm.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at... And then once you site these facilities... What kind of enrichments do you have? Are you going to have kindergartens? Are you going to have facilities where these kids can go to school and all of that? Or that kind of stuff? Or were you going to have, if they're self-governed, do you have a place where they're babysitters? All of that. The bill doesn't speak to those things. But if you don't speak to them, and that's why the units are great.
Well, actually, the bill does speak to wraparound supportive services.
Right.
It just doesn't
speak.
In other words, wraparound supportive services are already provided in Housing First programs. So the bill simply says that in accordance with Housing First practices, those services, and it appropriates $208 million a year for wraparound supportive services. That would include basic medical care, drug treatment care on demand, psychiatric care. There are also community centers at the center of each village that would have showers, places to lock valuables, and so on.
And when is this? I was reading the bill, and I stopped short of it. When is it going to be funded? How is it going to be funded?
Well, it would be funded from the state general fund, and ostensibly, if it passed, it would take effect July 1st, 2018, and the process would begin.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not passed, then who knows? And just in to answer your earlier question about self-government, the reason why the self-government provision was put in was to prevent what we see happening in a lot of public housing projects around the country, which is that this lack of a sense of ownership. We want people that live there to have a sense of ownership, like it's their village. And in fact, there was a study done by Appleseed of the homeless population in Hawaii recently. And one of the things they found is that spontaneously social networks develop in homeless camps, and a lot of self-governance takes place, and they can solve a lot of disputes internally and so forth.
Well, that's common in every human
right community. Exactly.
It's nothing unique. They're going to evolve into something that's going to hierarchy and monarchy and all that's going to occur within that little community.
Right.
Whether you go to Pu'u Vai Momi housing,
there's
always going to be one person there who has somehow floated to the top of position that they all go to when there's a problem. Self-governance and you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, actually, what they found is that just like Pu'u'onoa o Waianae, which is the homeless village on the Waianae coast, these self-governing entities are democratic in nature. It's not just somebody who's powerful that just happens to dominate the situation. And it's good to take advantage of that because it gives people a sense of ownership, a sense of home. It allows them to resolve disputes internally without always having to rely on the
HPD. You ever lived in the inner city? I take it you wouldn't. You probably not. That repeats itself over and over in the inner city communities. It's not new. It's not that aspect that I'm saying. I'm saying when we say self-governance, we have to be cautious mm-hmm. as to what we're providing and arming the people with
right.
to become self-governors. Because you end up inviting corruption
mm.
and hoarding and
right,
all kinds
right.
of things. And, you know, human beings, we're dealing with the human being. But
true.
But with Pu'uhonua, I would say that in the future, you got anything you want to put out, you're welcome to come back here. That's an invitation because something is better than nothing. But, you know, all the other human concerns, you know, where you cite them and
absolutely.
Not to, because they're homeless, so it's okay to put them around the crap pile. Or the, you know, no, let's keep an elevated thinking of that, yes, they're homeless, but it's not a sentence.
No.
And it's not an excuse to just, well, we'll just dump you over here. We still there's, we want the humane assessment.
It has to be a decent place to live. You're absolutely correct.
It's not to get them out of the way, out of Mililani, out of Waikai, out of Kaneohe. It's not to, with that, it's a crisis, as you've identified. And so I would say, in the citing, anybody that don't support this isn't fully informed. So I would say, for me, I'm listening to this great deal. I would love to see units provided. Why don't we do this all the time? But then the other aspect of it is because it seems there's a stigma. And these are human beings, and when they emerge from that unit and go out into the world, we shouldn't put lace upon them, a burden to that they wouldn't want to be publicly known as or being herded or shepherded.
Right.
We should protect that element, that human element, because it's good for the soul.
Absolutely.
You know, but anytime you have anything you want to talk about on that subject, I'd be willing to give you 30 minutes or whatever. Just keep
fantastic.
Us posted. And what's going to happen to the, when is it being heard, this bill?
So far, there are no hearings scheduled.
What?
That I know of. Well, the legislature just
signed it.
Right. Legislature just opened up the 17th, so I'm giving them a little time.
You better get busy now. You know how many people begging for their bill to be heard?
Right, right. So we're lobbying. So I invite everyone to go on the state legislature website.
How's your reception going when you're lobbying? Are they?
Everyone seems very positive about it. That'll take the time to meet with me.
Okay.
But, of course, a lot of people don't have the time to meet with me. So we'll see.
Well, I applaud you for what you're doing and clearly, you know, I'm hoping what I've said to you, you incorporate that, because at the end of the day, we're still talking about human beings, and
right.
I don't give a damn if you make a billion, a million, $30 a week, you're still a human being.
All right.
The one caller say we're entitled to water and food and all. That's
right.
Right. Well, if they can earn it, fine, but some can't earn it.
No, that's the truth.
And so they shouldn't be consigned or shipped off to the internment camp to breathe crap from the sewage treatment plant.
Right.
Every day, and, you know, Lord, forgive me, but I have a question. Why am I here?
Right.
Well, you got sick along the way, and your wife passed, or your husband passed, and you don't have any kids, and you fell and hurt yourself, and you're disabled, and nobody will hire you. That's why you're here.
Right.
Oh, okay. So, but anyway.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate you coming in.
Thank
Anything
you.
Else before you go?
No, thank you very much for having me. I hope everyone will support the Pu'uhonua Homeless Villages Act in both the House and the Senate and contact the legislature.
Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead. Hello.
Hi, Carol. Your guests have a website?
I was going to get that. Yeah, I was going to get the website you got. And
yeah, we do have a website. It's www.HawaiiKaiHomelessTaskForce.org.
Oh, okay. And do you have like a contact number or phone number?
A contact number is 808-428-9779. And if you just Google, by the way, the place that you really want to go is the Hawaii State Legislature website. And it's a .gov website. It's really easy to use. And you can go on there, you can submit testimony, you can send emails to your representative and tell them to support this bill.
What bills were there? There was one in the house and one.
Right,
the
right. The act is called the Pu'unoa Homeless Villages Act, but the bill numbers are, you want to support HB 2014 and SB 2628.
2628. Okay, great. Listen, I think another thing is, if you have pretty, you know, decent architecture in these villages, well, even good landscaping, which I know, you know, if you're in a nice neighborhood and there's nice landscaping and everything, it adds to your state of mind, you know, too, and that can be done at a pretty low cost too, And, you know, they're in Portland, Oregon. Have you heard of it? It's called Dignity Village.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah. Well, these are a bunch of homeless folks that got together. They got the city of Portland to set aside some land for them.
Yeah, and what we're talking about would be a lot nicer than Dignity Village, by the way. Dignity Village is basically some little tiny homes, which, not even tiny
right.
homes, they're really like little shacks that are in a parking lot with some porta potties, and that's not what we're talking about. And even
the people that live there say they're
much better off than being on the street.
But for a reasonable price.
Right, but we're not talking about it. We're talking about something much better.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Now, in a place, this is one of these elderly homes for the handicapped, too.
And David, it was quite
a transition to being homeless for all those years, because you get a whole different mindset. I'm trying to get used to being in a home, but a thing like a village kind of is a way to get people to get into the home kind of set. In a way,
right.
again, you know.
Okay, Dave. Hey, we're coming down in the last couple of minutes, and thank you for calling.
I have that information.
Alrighty.
I'm really interested in that. By the way, I'm one of the activists that come go to the Capitol and City Hall, and I've been doing this for a number of years now.
Okay.
Mostly because we were homeless, and I just saw.
Dave.
Carol came to visit us when we were homeless. It was awesome.
I gotta go. Okay. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care.
Bye. Call a thank you real quick. Your comment or question?
Yeah. What was that website for the Hawaii Tax Force? Is that a incorporated?
It's the Hawaii Kai Homeless Task.
Elected by people in Hawaii Kai. What's
Do
they have a charter? What is there?
The Hawaii Kai Homeless Task Force is not that important. What's important is the bills, but I'll certainly tell you about how it was created. It was just simply, the Hawaii Kai Homeless Task Force was just simply that was created by Representative Gene Ward. And what we're about is just finding a solution for the entire state. It's not about Hawaii Kai per se. It's about finding a solution to the entire state. And we help research this bill, but the bills are introduced by two Democrats, Tom Brower and Willis Sparrow. And they're supported by Republicans and Democrats, and it's really about getting these bills passed. That's what's going to solve the homeless crisis. So I invite you to visit the legislature website.
All right.
So it's just an organization of private individuals who got together.
Yeah, that's all it is. We're volunteers. We're volunteers.
Oh, so you have no authority?
No, we have zero authority over anything. I don't even have authority over my own home.
Thank you very much, right.
Okay.
What was the website again?
www.hawaiikaihomelesstaskforce.org. But what you really want to go to is hawaiistatelegislature.gov. That's where you really want to go.
Okay, thank you, caller. Thank you. Caller, go ahead real quick. Comment or question.
Yeah, Carol, concerning the homeless, I attended the Handy Van rate increase meeting last week on Monday, the 22nd. You wouldn't believe a fare of $2 each way in a Handy Van is going to go up to $8.50 each way. And you know, the homeless, like David, so they can't use the services because he's disabled. He won't be able to afford it.
So the price goes up to $8?
$8.50 by 2023 is gradually, a dollar here, a dollar there, $1.25 here, it's going to add up. And by now, it's going to go from now, from 2018, October, dollar. So $2 to $3, 50% increase.
Okay.
Dollar. I'll send you the information.
Hey, okay, thank you, Dave. Thanks. All right, bye.
Bye.
Caller, go ahead with the comment or question.
Good morning, Mr. Carol.
Good morning. How are you? Real quick.
I'm okay. As you build homes for the homeless, I think social programs should be incorporated with the construction of homes.
They are. They are.
So that, the quality of life is more than just having a roof over yourself.
Yes, there are social programs. The bill appropriates enough money for what are called wraparound supportive services. So, yes, there would be.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I hope we succeed in making Hawaii a better place for all of us, as the Constitution is, we, the people, in this de facto state. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, caller. Aloha. Okay. Mike, thank you. Mike Goodman, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
I appreciate
Pleasure.
You calling, and thanks for stepping in the ring and going the box with this monster.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
You got more guts than I do. Because
I don't have any guts, believe me. You have more guts than me.
There's so much to be thrown out there and in this system. You know, some don't want to be giving it, and you're taking it from it and giving people something for nothing, and the reality is, it's our brothers and sisters, cousins, aunts and uncles, and other human beings. So thank you for joining and doing that. So
you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
All righty. And don't hesitate to call back and come back in. We'll give you more time. So
terrific.
And okay, this is the Carol Cox Show, and thank you. And next week I'm going to be following up, you know, on the rapid Ohia death, the fungus that is... During the hurricanes, there's a situation where that area was infected with the fungus, and I'm trying to track down a story on some background where, even though they know the precautions to take, they actually contaminated many acres of land on Saddle Road when they transported the equipment that were used to cut trees and chainsaws and trucks and bulldozers and whatever, the mud and the tires. And they know this. And all you have to do is do some soapy water washdown. So we got some information, and we're looking at that. But I'm told more than 130,000 acres are actually impacted now with this fungus. So if you are inclined to go to the Big Island and bring back a lehua, papa, lehua, ohia tree, please make sure that it has been treated or sanitized, because if we lose the trees, we lose the birds and the EEV and all of that. So I hope to have more information on this next week. But again, we're just trying to track down some information that we received where the precautions were already in place, but they failed to implement them and have since contaminated, moved it from an area called Malia, I think, to a Saddle Road and contaminated it. So anyway, we'll talk to you next week. This is Carol Cox, and I'll see you next week. Aloha.